Monetary policy. Monetary policy influences the decisions that we make about how much we save, borrow and spend. Decisions made by the central banks that operate monetary policy can have a powerful effect on consumers and businesses. What is money? Money is any asset that is acceptable as a medium of exchange in payment for goods and services. The functions of money are as follows. 1. A medium of exchange, used in payment for goods and services. 2. A unit of account, used to relative measure prices and draw up accounts. 3. A standard of deferred payment, for example when using credit, to purchase goods and services now, but pay for them later. 4. A store of value, money holds its value fairly well, unless there is a situation of accelerating inflation. As the general price level in the economy rises, so the internal value of a unit of currency decreases. Interest rates. The media often talks about interest rates going up, or interest rates going down, as if there was one single or unique rate of interest in the economy. That isn't true. Indeed, there are thousands of different rates in the financial markets. It can get very confusing. For example, we distinguish between savings rates and borrowing rates, interest rates on secured and unsecured loans, and short-term and long-term interest rates on different forms of savings account. However, we find that interest rates tend to move in the same direction. For example, if the Bank of England cuts the base rate of interest, then we expect to see banks cutting the rates on their overdrafts and loans, and also lower rates are offered on savings accounts with banks and building societies. The real rate of interest. The real rate of interest is important to businesses and consumers when making spending and saving decisions. The real rate of return on savings, for example, is the money rate of interest minus the rate of inflation. So if a saver is receiving a money rate of interest of 6% on his savings, but price inflation is running at 3% per year, the real rate of return on these savings is only plus 3%. Real interest rates become negative when the nominal rate of interest is less than inflation. For example, if inflation is 5% and nominal interest rates are 4%, the real cost of borrowing money is negative at minus 1%. The Bank of England and the operation of monetary policy. The Bank of England has been independent since 1997, when an incoming Labour government decided that in future, decisions on interest rates would be taken out of the hands of politicians and given to the bank, who then established the Monetary Policy Committee, MPC. The MPC has 9 members, some of whom are appointed by the government and some by the Bank of England. The governor of the bank has the casting vote. If there is an equally split decision on interest rates, he is never on the losing side. Each month the MPC meets to consider the latest news on the UK and global economy. Their job is to make a judgment on what is the appropriate level of base interest rates for the UK economy, consistent with the need to meet an inflation target set by the government. That inflation target is consumer price inflation of 2%. The MPC also has one eye on keeping the economy growing, although a set rate of GDP growth is not part of their target, and the rate of inflation is allowed to vary by 1% either side of the 2% target, so they have some leeway. Setting interest rates, fine-tuning the economy. The Bank of England usually prefers a gradualist approach to monetary policy, believing that a series of small movements in interest rates is a more effective strategy in controlling inflationary pressures than sharp jumps in the cost of borrowing money. For example, when demand is thought to be rising too quickly and threatening higher prices, the aim is not to shock consumers and businesses to control their spending, but to gradually increase the cost of borrowing money and increase the incentive to save, so that the pace of growth moderates and the economy can continue to grow without causing rising inflation. Factors considered when setting interest rates. At each of their rate-setting meetings, the members of the MPC consider a huge amount of information on the state of the economy. Here are some of the factors they consider when making rate decisions. GDP growth and spare capacity. The rate of growth of GDP and the size of the output gap. Their main task is to set monetary policy so that AD grows in line with productive potential. Bank lending and consumer credit figures, including the levels of equity withdrawal from the housing market, and also data on credit card lending. Equity markets, share prices, and house prices both are considered important in determining household wealth, which then feeds through to borrowing and retail spending. The Monetary Policy Committee has no official target for the annual rate of house price inflation, but it has been criticized for not doing enough to prevent the housing bubble during the first 8 years of present decade. Consumer confidence and business confidence. Confidence surveys can provide advance warning of turning points in the economic cycle. These are called backquote leading indicators. The growth of wages, average earnings and unit labor costs. Wage inflation might be a cause of cost push inflation. Unemployment figures and survey evidence on the scale of shortages of skilled labor. Trends in global foreign exchange markets. A weaker exchange rate could be seen as a threat to inflation, because it raises the prices of imported goods and services. International data, including recent developments in the Eurozone, emerging market countries and the United States and Japan. The key point is that the Monetary Policy Committee considers many indicators from both the demand and the supply side of the economy. They then have to make a judgment about what this evidence says about inflationary pressures over a 2-year forecast horizon. Why do they have to look up to 2 years ahead? Because when interest rates are changed, it takes time for them to have an effect on aggregate demand and prices. Uncertain time lags in a world of many external economic shocks make the handling of monetary policy a difficult job. Effects of changes in interest rates. Before we look at the impact of rate changes, it is worth remembering that, when the bank is making a decision, there will be lots of other events and policy decisions being made elsewhere in the economy, for example changes in fiscal policy by the government, or perhaps a change in world oil prices or the exchange rate. In macroeconomics, the ceteris paribus assumption, all other factors held equal, rarely applies. The transmission mechanism of monetary policy. There are several ways in which changes in interest rates influence aggregate demand. These are collectively known as the transmission mechanism of monetary policy. One of the principal channels that the MPC can use to influence aggregate demand, and therefore inflation, is via the lending and borrowing rates charged by the market. When the bank's base interest rate goes up, then banks and building societies will typically increase the rates that they charge on loans and the interest that they offer on savings. This tends to discourage businesses from taking out loans to finance investment, and encourages the consumer to save rather than spend, and so depresses aggregate demand. Conversely, when the base rate falls, banks tend to cut the market rates offered on loans and savings. This will tend to stimulate AD. A key influence played by interest rate changes is the effect on confidence, in particular households' confidence about their own personal financial circumstances. Changes in rates affect 1. Housing market and house prices. Higher interest rates increase the cost of mortgages and eventually reduce the demand for most types of housing. This will slow the growth of household wealth, and put a squeeze on equity withdrawal, consumers borrowing off the back of rising house prices, which adds directly to consumer spending. 2. Effective disposable incomes of mortgage payers. If interest rates increase, the income of home earners, who have variable rate mortgages, will fall, leading to a decline in their effective purchasing power. The effects of a rate change are greater when the level of existing mortgage debt is high, as this makes property owners more exposed to higher costs of repaying debts. 3. Disposable income of savers. On the other hand, a rise in interest rates boosts the disposable income of people who have paid off their mortgage and who have positive net savings in bank and building society accounts. 4. Consumer demand for credit. Higher interest rates increase the cost of servicing debt on credit cards and should lead to a deceleration in the growth of retail sales and spending on consumer durables. 5. Business capital investment. Firms often take the actual and expected level of interest rates into account when deciding whether or not to go ahead with new investment spending. A rise in short-term rates may dampen confidence and lead to a reduction in planned capital investment. However, many factors influence investment decisions other than rate changes. 6. Consumer and business confidence. The relationship between interest rates and business and consumer confidence is complex and depends crucially on prevailing economic conditions. For example, when businesses and consumers are worried about the recession, an interest rate cut can boost confidence, because it reassures the public that the bank is alert to the dangers of a slump. There are circumstances, however, where a cut in rates could undermine confidence. For example, were the Bank of England to cut interest rates too quickly, the fear might be that the bank is worried about the prospects of a recession. Did this happen in late 2008, early 2009? 7. Interest rates and the exchange rate. Higher UK interest rates might lead to an appreciation of the exchange rate, particularly if UK interest rates rise relative to those in the Eurozone and the United States, attracting inflows of hot money into the British banking system. A stronger exchange rate reduces the competitiveness of UK exports in overseas markets, because it makes our exports appear more expensive when priced in a foreign currency, leading to a decline in export volumes and market share. It also reduces the sterling price of imported goods and services, leading to lower prices and rising import penetration. If the trade deficit in goods and services widens, this is a net withdrawal of demand from the circular flow and acts to reduce excess demand in the economy. Monetary policy asymmetry. Fluctuations in interest rates do not have a uniform impact on the economy. Some industries are more affected by interest rate changes than others, for example exporters and industries connected to the housing market. And some regions of the economy are also more sensitive to a change in the direction of interest rates. The markets that are most affected by changes in interest rates are those where demand is interest elastic. In other words, demand responds elastically to a change in interest rates, or indirectly through changes in the exchange rate. Good examples of interest-sensitive industries include those directly linked to demand conditions in the housing market, exporters of manufactured goods, the construction industry, and leisure services. In contrast, the demand for basic foods and utilities is less affected by short-term fluctuations in interest rates, and is affected more by changes in commodity prices such as oil and gas. Ultra-low interest rates in 2009 and 2010. The Bank of England started cutting interest rates in the autumn of 2008 as the credit crunch was starting to bite, and business and consumer confidence was taking a huge hit. By the start of 2009, rates were down to 3% and they carried on falling. As the chart above shows, by the summer of 2009 the policy interest rate in the UK was 0.5% and the Bank of England had reached the point of no return when it comes to cutting interest rates. The decision to reduce official base rates to their minimum was in response to evidence of a deepening recession and fears of price deflation. Ultra-low interest rates are an example of an expansionary monetary policy, that is, a policy designed to deliberately boost aggregate demand and output. In theory, cutting interest rates close to zero provides a big monetary stimulus. This means that mortgage payers have less interest to pay, increasing their effective disposable income. Cheaper loans should provide a possible floor for house prices in the property market. Businesses will be under less pressure to meet interest payments on their loans. The cost of consumer credit should fall, encouraging the purchase of big-ticket items such as a new car or kitchen. Lower interest rates might cause a depreciation of sterling, thereby boosting the competitiveness of the export sector. Lower rates are designed to boost consumer and business confidence. But some analysts argue that in current circumstances, the usual transmission mechanism for monetary policy may have broken down, and that cutting interest rates has little impact initially on demand, production, and prices. Several reasons have been put forward for this. 1. The unwillingness of banks to lend. Most banks have become risk-averse, and they have engaged in a process known as deleveraging, which in layman's terms means that they are cutting the size of their loan books and making credit harder to obtain. 2. Banks have been reluctant to pass interest rate cuts on to consumers, and there is little incentive to lend when interest rates are at such low levels. 3. Low consumer confidence. People are not prepared to commit to major purchases because the recession has made people risk-averse as unemployment rises. Weak expectations lower the effect of rate changes on consumer demand, that is, there is a low interest elasticity of demand. 4. Huge levels of debt still need to be paid off, including over £200 billion on credit cards. The falling asset prices and expectations that property prices will continue to fall makes it unlikely that cheap mortgages will provide an immediate boost to the housing market. Although official monetary policy interest rates are now close to zero, the rate of interest charged on loans and overdrafts has actually increased. The cost of borrowing using credit cards and bank loans is a high multiple of the policy rate. In August 2009 it was 40 times base rate. Little wonder that many smaller businesses have complained that the Bank of England's policy of "cheap money" has done little to improve their situation during the recession. Quantitative easing. On Wednesday 11th March 2009 the Bank of England started a policy of quantitative easing, QE, for the first time. QE is also called as "asset purchase scheme". The aim of QE is to support demand in the economy and prevent a period when inflation is persistently below target or becomes negative deflation. The Bank of England can use QE to act on the quantity of money. The media call this "printing money", but this is only true in an electronic sense. The bank does not actually print new £10, £20 and £50 notes in an attempt to inject cash into the economic system. Under this "unconventional strategy", the MPC discusses each month how many assets, including government bonds, to buy with central bank money. This money is simply created by the central bank and is the equivalent of turning on the printing press. Fed pledges to keep interest rates exceptionally low. Here is an interesting approach to interest rate setting by the US central bank, the Federal Reserve. The Fed has pledged to maintain ultra-low interest rates for the time being in a bid to support and sustain a recovery in demand and output, and reduce the risk of a double-dip recession later on this year. According to an announcement from Ben Bernanke, chairman of the Fed, the committee will maintain the target range for the federal funds interest rate at 0 to 1/4% and continues to anticipate that macroeconomic conditions, including low rates of resource utilization, subdued inflation trends, and stable inflation expectations, are likely to warrant exceptionally low levels of the federal funds rate for an extended period. Expectations play a key role in shaping the nature and speed of an economic recovery. If businesses believe interest rates will stay low, and that they can benefit from an unfreezing of business finance, and get the loans they need to expand, the chances of a stronger pickup in stocks, and then capital investment are higher. Consumers too, and homeowners in particular, will breathe a sigh of relief that U.S. monetary policy will not be tightened too early before a recovery has a better foothold. Any the Fed sending this signal about interest rates has caused the U.S. dollar to depreciate in the currency markets. Low interest rates cause hot money flows to look elsewhere for higher returns. A lower dollar is a boost to the export industries in the U.S. and a cause of a sharp jump in the Dow Jones Index. The absence of demand pull and cost push inflationary pressures helps the Fed to push the view that rates will stay low. And their dual mandate of price stability and maintaining growth also gives them more leeway to maintain an expansionary stance. Evaluation points on interest rates. 1. Time lags should always be considered when analyzing the effects of rate changes. 2. Over the last 16 years, interest rates have been used to manage aggregate demand, with the exchange rate left for the currency market to determine. 3. Many home ER1s have fixed-rate mortgages and are not affected in the immediate period after an interest rate change. 4. Consider how a change in mortgage interest rates affects people in rented properties. 5. Consider the effect of increasing or decreasing in interest rates on people with positive savings. 6. Demand can be interest inelastic, making rate changes less effective in managing the level of aggregate demand. 7. Monetary policy does not work in isolation. Always consider how the government's handling of fiscal policy is affecting demand and inflationary pressures. Monetary policy and the output gap puzzle. With the immediate sense of crisis behind us, the chances of a downward spiral of deflation and economic activity have diminished. But our economy certainly has a large output gap. This is the difference between actual economic output and the most the economy could produce given the factors of production available. When actual output exceeds potential, the demand for products and labor bids up prices and wages, fueling inflation. When actual output falls short, competition for scarce sales and jobs puts downward pressure on inflation. But how big is our output gap? How do you really gauge a firm's capacity, especially in services? How many of those not working could work? How fast is productivity growing over time? Economic shocks make the task even harder. They may render big chunks of our capital stock redundant. Many idle car factories or steel plants, for example, may never reopen. Workers thrown out of a shrunken industry like finance or construction may take years to retrain for another. Some may never succeed. Although unemployed, they are not really competing for the jobs that fall vacant, and are thus not putting much downward pressure on wages. That means the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment, or the NARU, may have risen. In other words, when actual output falls, it can drag potential output down with it. It is widely held amongst economists that, if a country has a relatively rigid labor market, it means someone who loses a job will take much longer to find another. Britain is seen to have a fairly flexible labor market, so hopefully the NERU should remain fairly low. Potential output should stay in place, awaiting a smooth, rapid recovery. But doubt over the size of the output gap poses a big problem when the Bank of England thinks through its monetary policy decisions. They must not stimulate the economy too much, which they might do if they overestimate the size of the output gap. The opposite risk is that, if they underestimate the size of the gap, it could allow inflation to completely melt away, even risking the specter of deflation. This is even worse than the problem of inflation, and can have a devastating impact. Japan suffered this fate, and suffered a backward-loss decade of low growth. The OECD notes that when Finland and Canada experienced large and persistent output gaps in the 1990s, inflation fell quite far, but did not become deflation, which it puts down to the success of central banks in anchoring expectations with inflation targets. Britain has had such a target since 1997. Inflation or deflation may be avoided if firms and households have become convinced that the price level is now relatively stable and behave accordingly. 101b1c 2a2b2c 2nd 3a3b3c 3rd 4a 5a5b5c 5d 6a6b6c 7a7b8a8b8c 8d 9a9b9c 9d. A significant part of Japan's problem was that when deflation became entrenched, people acted accordingly. They slashed spending and investment in what became a self-fulfilling deflationary cycle. Perhaps the Bank of England should risk overestimating the size of our output gap and keep up the stimulus until recovery is beyond doubt.